that dance, like, it helps me, like, be able to walk up to a person and make conversation.
Student at South LA's Dorsey High School learned to break out of their shells with a one-of-a-kind salsa dance class. Good afternoon from the University of Southern California, and welcome to Annenberg Radio News for Tuesday, April 17, 2012. I'm Emily Frost. Today is Tax Day, a day dreaded by Americans of all economic standings. To support Governor Jerry Brown's new tax initiative, hundreds of people took to the streets of downtown Los Angeles. Kira Brecky has the story.
Hundreds of people took to the streets in downtown Los Angeles today to protest a system they say gives unfair tax breaks to the wealthy. Those marching also support Governor Jerry Brown's new tax initiative. Martin Terrones is a communications coordinator for the United Servers Workers West, which represents janitors.
We're here to basically say, stop giving these janitors an excuse that you have no money to give them a modest pay increase to cover their health care benefits.
Governor Brown's initiative would increase sales taxes by a quarter of a cent. It would also raise income taxes for people who make more than $250,000 per year. 89% of these temporary tax revenues would be given to K-12 schools and 11% to community colleges. Melissa Chadburn is an organizer for Good Jobs LA. She says she understands the importance of this cause.
I come from a working family. I grew up in foster care, and I think that it's about time that the California's tax initiative gets passed so that we can go ahead and continue to fund those programs that are much needed.
A USC Dornsif LA Times poll found that at the end of March, nearly two-thirds of Californians supported Brown's tax initiative. Again, United Workers West coordinator Martin Terrones.
I applaud the governor for trying to put an initiative that's going to make them pay a greater amount of taxes that they're paying now. No more tax schemes, no nothing. Pay what you have to. We're doing it, and we're still taking a stand here today.
As expected, not everybody supports Brown's tax initiative. Chris Vosburg is the executive director for the Howard Jarvis Taxpayers Association.
If it passes, it will be a tax on the ignorance of voters who approve it. There's always people on the margin, in this case, people who are maybe successful, maybe have a small business, are going, I just can't afford this additional tax and still have my business remain competitive. I'm leaving. And when they leave, they take jobs with them. And if you multiply that 100 times, 1,000 times, 100,000 times, then you see you have real impact on the California economy.
In order to appear on the November 6, 2012 ballot, the initiative has to bring in 807,615 signatures. Kira Brecky, Annenberg Radio News.
Even though we got an extra 2 days to file our taxes this year, it's a stressful day for many. We heard from last-minute filers today at the post office on Vermont Avenue across from USC.
I do my taxes early to avoid the stress of trying to get them done at the 11th hour.
I didn't have that much money to make my payments, so to the IRS, yeah, I'm a little stressed out.
I always do, absolutely, and get them mailed and everything on time.
Actually, today I'm a little bit early. I normally wait till like late into the night.
I can't put up with the last minute stress of getting it in on the last day.
Many years ago, and I found it to be extremely stressful.
Trying to do that, trying to run other errands, and do that all before I have to go to work.
It's probably taking off from work early, and the traffic is kind of hectic out there.
Absolutely stressful. It's a lot of forms of feeling.
No, I do this every year. I wait till the last minute.
The taxpayers at the post office today are a vanishing lot. Most taxpayers are now filing their returns online. Councilman Bernard Parks announced today the city council will be offering a $75,000 reward for information on the recent murders of two USC students from China. The students were killed almost a week ago as they were sitting in a car on Raymond Avenue. The crime happened in District 8, which is represented by Parks. Deputy Brittany Marin is his press deputy.
Councilmember Parks, you know, felt that we had to do something to help and try to bring justice to the two students who were murdered and to try and help fix, to a certain extent, what happened. We're serious about trying to find whoever did this and that, you know, this can't happen again.
USC is already offering a reward of $125,000. The police say they are still trying to find the shooter, who was last seen driving away from the crime scene in a dark-colored car. This week, the parents of the two Chinese grad students met with their children's host families. They also spoke to school officials and police about the case. Students from all over the Los Angeles Unified School District got the morning off of school to see the award-winning documentary called Bully. It follows the lives of five high school students who are bullied. Jake O'Brien reports on the screening at the Nokia Theater at LA Live.
How hard is it to pack 6,500 students into the Nokia Theater at LA Live? That question was answered today. The LA Fund for Public Education partnered with other organizations to screen the award-winning documentary Bully to students, teachers, and principals from middle and high schools across the LAUSD. Some estimate that as many as 13 million students are bullied each day. LAUSD officials were unable to comment, but Mayor Antonio Villaraigosa hopes the screening will promote students to take action against bullying.
That's why we're partnering with the fund. To really show this to kids, to remind them that we've got to say no to bullying, we got to report it, we've got to take it very seriously.
The documentary recently faced controversy regarding its rating. Originally, the Motion Picture Association of America gave the film an R rating due to excessive use of harsh language. The filmmakers slightly re-edited Bully in order to earn a PG-13 rating so the film could reach more middle and high school students. The mayor believes having Bully reach a large audience is essential.
To be able to see this important documentary, I got to see it last night, and I can tell you it's powerful. As a father, as someone who operates schools, as someone who's committed to protecting our kids, this is an opportunity for people to realize that there are 13 million kids who are bullied. That's 13 million too many.
After the screening, LAUSD students and faculty participated in a town hall meeting to empower students to create and expand anti-bullying programs in their schools and hopefully bring an end to the torment some students face. Jake O'Brien, Annenberg Radio News.
The number of out-of-state and international students admitted to University of California schools is up by 43% over last year. Non-California residents pay $23,000 more in tuition, which could help the UC schools plug some of the gaps caused by state budget cuts. For California students, the admittance rate dropped 4% this year. Applicants have until May 1st to notify the university whether they intend to enroll. Last year, close to 77,000 people were awarded American citizenship. In downtown L.A., more than 4,000 people took part in this naturalization ceremony today. Reporter Jackie Grant has more.
Place your right hand over your heart and repeat after me. I pledge allegiance to the flag.
Judge Scott Clarkson swore in more than 4,000 new citizens this morning. The Los Angeles Convention Center was packed with candidates who represented more than 120 countries. The most represented are the Philippines, Vietnam, Iran, Korea, and China. The number one country should come as no surprise. More than 1,000 of today's candidates hailed from Mexico, such as Rosa Vernell. She is glad to be finished with the naturalization process.
First, we need to fill the application. Then you take about 2 weeks to receive your first response. And then you go to do your fingerprints. Then after that, about 4 months later, you receive another form to do your test. And then this is the last step.
The naturalization process can be daunting and includes an interview and test with a United States Citizenship and Immigration Service officer. The officer looks for the ability to speak English and knowledge of the United States history. But regardless of how time-consuming the process can be, candidates like Joel Van Camp from Egypt had many reasons to apply.
This is more freedom. We can vote. We can go out of position in government. It's like sheriff, like governor maybe in one day. Yeah.
Whatever the reasons are for citizenship, the naturalization ceremony made sure to highlight the importance of being an active citizen. Z. Bilic, who's originally from Turkey, was pleased with the ceremony speakers.
I mean, I really appreciated that that's what was highlighted here today. Whether it was the district officer who spoke, or the president, or the court, the judge, that they really underline how important it is to be an active member of your community and to write your own chapter.
And with certificate in hand, these newly awarded citizens can now apply for a passport, vote, and call themselves proud American citizens. Jackie Grant, Annenberg Radio News.
And now for the weather. Last week's April showers have disappeared and we're back to warmer weather. Expect an overnight low tonight of 57. Tomorrow we'll have a cloud-free day with a high of 75 and a low of 56. More pleasant weather on Thursday, mostly sunny with a high of 76 and a low of 59. Later on Annenberg Radio News, we look at how Korean Americans are faring 20 years after the LA riots sent shockwaves through the community. Today, getting into a reputable four-year university is no easy task. College-bound students are often told to build strong resumes, earn sky-high GPAs, dominate the SAT, and write an essay so amazing it would make Jane Austen cry. But for a couple dozen students at Dorsey High School, the strategy to reach their dream school is simple. Just dance. Conrad Wilton has the story.
Hey, we got more people who are coming to the bathroom, but I need to see four lines first.
It's Friday morning at Dorsey High School, and second-year math teacher Edward Kussel Ziegelman, better known as Ed KZ, is about to start a class that has nothing to do with adding or subtracting.
One of my coordinators proposed the idea to me last year to teach any elective I wanted. She said, you're going to have an empty space, empty class. What do you want to teach?
For KZ, the choice was easy. He's a member of Break On 2, the University of Southern California's premier salsa performance group. So KZ started a partner dance class at Dorsey last fall, and it's open to students of all shapes and sizes, which is good news for athletes like Javonte Warren.
When you talk about this class to your friends, what do they say?
They laugh because I'm freakishly tall. And when they come in here to see, everybody else is short.
KZ's partner dance class makes Dorsey High one of the only schools in the Los Angeles Unified School District to have an organized dance class. But dancing isn't the only thing the class teaches.
This class in particular is something special for the kids, not just because it's the arts, but because it's partner dance. So what's really neat and unique about this class and would be at any program at any high school is that they're really learning how to socialize with each other.
Whether it's dancing the tango, doing the cha-cha, or shuffling to the salsa, KZ emphasizes the importance of social etiquette and mutual respect.
It's been pretty cool. Like, I kind of opened up as a person. Like, I used to be kind of, like, shy and stuff. But now that I dance, like, it helps me, like, be able to walk up to a person and make conversation.
That's Shelton Sanders, a senior who says partner dance has helped him open up his social life.
Mr. KZ came in and asked us about dancing, and he said it was with girls, so I was like, yeah, this is awesome. Like, you know, I get to dance.
Girls aren't the only attractive aspect of the course. The Dorsey students get to interact with USC students and alumni through a mentorship program set up by KZ, a USC graduate of 2010. The high schoolers recently visited USC to perform in USC's Break On 2 Salsa Club. Armin Jordan said the experience helped him get excited about attending college this fall.
Through this program, I was able to go to USC for one of the first times and meet some of the college students and listen to some of their experiences, and it's definitely made me want to go to college.
Almost all of the partner dance students are college-bound, and we're not talking about your average two-year community college.
I am planning on going to UCLA in the fall.
USC and University of Miami.
Central Florida University.
San Diego, Aztec.
Stanford. And UCLA.
But the mentorship program doesn't just benefit the students of partner dance. Erica Soto graduated USC in 2011. She mentors the partner dance students every week at Dorsey High School.
Every student has a USC college mentor, and we basically write to each other back and forth. And I feel like we're making a really great impact on their lives. We're really influencing them in a positive way. And it also reminds me of who I'm trying to be. You know, it keeps me motivated to stay in a positive path and moving forward in a positive direction.
The partner dance class will return to USC for the Break On 2 showcase this Thursday night at Bovard Auditorium. This is Conrad Wilton, Annenberg Radio News.
As tension builds between Iran, Israel, and the United States, the Iranian-American community in Los Angeles seems split on whether to speak out. In our series 20-something, Tara Kangaraloo explores what her generation has learned from her parents' generation, who experienced the 1979 Islamic Revolution.
After the revolution, many of my parents' generation came to the States in hopes of democracy, freedom, and success. In hopes of a promising regime, our parents' generation brought the Islamic Revolution. Now, 33 years into the revolution, we're confronting a possibility of another conflict.
A strong warning to Iran.
No options.
They are introducing a resolution backing the use.
Yet, as the nation of my birth stands at the brink of war, so much of our community seems heedless. The biggest news out of our diaspora now? A new reality show called Shahs of Sunset.
I went to Beverly Hills High School.
I went to Beverly High.
I went to Beverly.
Beverly.
I'm baffled that at a critical time, so many of my people are focused on such mindlessness.
You like it?
You look amazing. Image is everything.
Turns out, I'm not alone. One morning, I invited a musician friend, Siavash, over for breakfast. He also brought his guitar. Siavash too agreed that the image portrayed by Shahs of Sunset captures many trivial realities of our new lives in America. He blames this on the disappointments passed down from our parents' generation.
Most of them, they don't have hope. Because you just feel you don't have any power to change anything. You don't have any power to say anything. Therefore, why bother?
I serve Siavash homemade sour cherry jam with toast. He takes a sip of his unsweetened tea.
Older generation, you know, they're like, oh, you know, we just want to make our, you know, money and, you know, do our business. We don't want to deal with politics because it failed once and they failed big time. They're afraid to do it again.
He might be right, but is our generation just carrying out the lessons of our elders?
There's a lot of pressure to marry within the community.
What does it take to be heard beyond this reality show? I feel sorry for the cast, yet more disappointed in my generation and the entire community. Embedded in their shallow lives is the same ignorance and hopelessness we blame on our parents' generation.
It's time for the baby factory to open up.
There's going
to
be a war between Iran and other countries. It's really sad that we don't have that unity to show that we have all these good people. Unfortunately, we have these kids running around with their nice cars, getting this stage.
Two things I don't like. I don't like ants, and I don't like ugly people.
This is part of the stereotype of Iranians in modern mainstream America.
After breakfast, I called my friend Amir, a West Point graduate, to see if I'm worrying too much.
What's at stake is not my individual success or an engineer or a doctor's individual success. What is at stake is really a war with Iran. If Iranian Americans don't determine their own future, somebody else is going to determine it for us.
Siavash, Amir, and I believe that it's up to our generation to do something. Are we ready? Sometimes I wonder.
All about cash, flash, gold.
While the embarrassment of mediocrity seems to be the new recipe for fame, I hope this doesn't taint my entire generation. It's time for us to take part in framing our own narrative and tell our own story, a story that defines Iranians beyond the 79 hostage crisis, beyond Ahmadinejad, and beyond a group of shallow characters who live a scripted life. Tara Kangaraloo, Annenberg Radio News.
That Iran is an existential danger to them.
There's a lot of soul-searching going on in Los Angeles as we approach the 20th anniversary of the L.A. riots. It's a time that brought devastation to many Koreans living here as some rioters unleashed their anger on Korean shop owners. Earlier today, I spoke with Haepin Im, the president and CEO of Korean Churches for Community Development. It's an organization that works to build the capacities of Korean churches and nonprofits and fuel economic development. We began our conversation talking about the high language barriers and rates of poverty among Koreans in California.
You know, unfortunately, because of the model minority myth, a lot of people don't know. And even for Koreans, they take it upon themselves that even though they may be struggling, they think that everyone else is doing well. This is a stat from 2008, which is one of the latest stats. It shows that home ownership rate for Latinos and African American was about 48-47%. Korean home ownership was only at 40%. So a lot of these data and stats show the commonality of the struggles and challenges that we all have. Another misperception that is very pervasive is the fact that many of these business owners who are Asian may have special access to money. My father-in-law's story is not uncommon. He came to America. He was a highly educated gentleman. And when he came, because of the language barrier, he was able to get a job at American Airlines as a janitor. And he worked 10 years to save $5,000. And when he tried to get a loan, he couldn't get a loan. But he was lucky enough to find a business owner who was willing to carry the loan for him. And when he got that business, he worked 16-hour days. Did he want to work 16 hours? No. Did he want to use his son as an indentured servant? No. But he had to. That's kind of the reality for many of these store owners who are there not by choice, but because, again, their options are also limited too.
So 20 years later, do you think that those bridges of connection between the African-American community and the Korean-American community are happening? Do you think that there has been progress?
You know, there's a greater appreciation and understanding of one another and some of the gifts and talents. At the same time, I would say the kind of the story or the narrative around the LA riots and the business store owners and, you know, the community in South LA and other parts like that where there's high poverty, high crime, the intensity, I think, is still there right beneath the surface. And I would say the recent comment from former mayor of Washington, Marion Barry, when he said we need to get rid of all the Asian business owners and replace with African-American business owners, is still a sentiment that might be felt by many because, again, there's this impression that Asian business owners have somehow gotten special privilege, they're rich, and they're coming in to target and abuse the community as well. And so that's some of the things that we hope to alleviate, you know, when we share some of the common poverty challenges, common high conviction rate challenges, high, you know, foreclosure rate challenges, all those kind of things that we're all in it together.
How has the Korean community recovered? The city suffered $1 billion in losses, and half of that was to Korean business owners.
Well, if you were to look at Koreatown, you would say that our community has been very resilient, and we have come back in full force. The vast majority have suffered greatly. They've had mental health, PTSD challenges, as well as losing their home, going to foreclosure, loss of their businesses and being forced to go into other lines of jobs or businesses. So there is that memory and pain, I think, that is the greatest. But the vast majority of these individuals, what they look to is that they're grateful that their children are still pursuing the American dream. Being part of America was something that was reinforced through the riots, even though it was a temporary moment of pain, as well as sometimes sense of loss and even betrayal. But again, our community is here, and their conviction to be part of America, I think, is even greater because of that experience.
Venice residents are protesting plans to close the neighborhood's historic post office. Tricia Tonko has the story.
The post office is one of the last historic buildings in the city, with a beloved mural on it depicting the history of Venice. So it should be no surprise that residents are upset about the building's closure. Resident Jim Smith says the 73-year-old post office is much more than a building. It's a place for a community. He has lived in Venice since 1968.
I've seen a lot of changes, but one thing that's been constant during all that time is the post office, which is really kind of like a community center. It's a place where we meet our friends and neighbors and have a chance to talk and so forth.
Some Venice residents don't have internet access, so they rely heavily on mail delivery. But the Postal Service faces mounting debt as more people pay their bills online and turn to texting and email. In response, the U.S. Postal Service announced in February it will close or consolidate 223 mailing centers. In another blow to the Postal Service, the U.S. Senate voted today to end Saturday mail delivery after 2 years. Tricia Tonko, Annenberg Radio News. Now we check in with Kendall Fisher to see what's coming up on Annenberg TV News at 6 p.m. on Trojan Vision. Kendall?
Thank you. Tonight we'll bring you the latest on the student shootings from last week, as well as information on the memorial. We also have a story on the fish mislabeling scandal here in L.A. And finally, see how a haunted house might be the center of a new scandal. That's tonight at 6 on ATVN.
Thank you so much. Well, that's it for this Tuesday. We had help from Anna Catherine Brigida, Evan Budrovich, and John Diebold. Aaron Schrank is our producer. For all of us here at Annenberg Radio News, I'm Emily Frost. Thank you.